Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is June 4th, 2014, and with me I have Kelly Gaumont. Hey, Kelly, how are you?
I'm good, Jeff. How are you?
I'm doing really good. And also John Martellaro, I hope you're doing well too, John.
I am. Good morning, Jeff.
Good morning. Okay, so we have a couple topics that that I chose specifically because I wanted to bring you guys on the show. And so I thought we'd start with an analysis piece that you wrote yesterday, John, about how Apple already has their next hardware platform ready to go, and it's the iPhone.
I must admit, I was guilty of some fuzzy thinking prior to WWDC in terms of some sort of hardware that would tie all of these devices together. And it turned out not to be necessary at all. And then yesterday, Adam Christensen and I were talking, and Adam has been working on this mind map model of Apple customers and how their utilization flows through Apple's ecosystem.
I'm going to interrupt you for 1 second.
Great idea. Yes.
Just because there's probably like 3 people in the world that don't know who Adam is. Adam is the host of the MacCast, and he's also the amazingly awesome wizard that makes sure a lot of the back-end stuff for Mac Observer happens. So continue.
Yes, he is great. And so he reminded us of this model view controller metaphor that Apple appears to be using. It comes from computer science and computer programming and object-oriented programming, but it really has a wide application to what Apple's doing with their infrastructure in terms of their hardware and their software. And the way it breaks down is the model is the data model. All of the information that we access, things like our photos and the state of our home, the state of the lights and the locks, our financial data, purchases, contact information, reminders, our entertainment preferences. So you have this model for the information that people want to utilize. And then there's the view part of this system, which is basically the hardware. How do we get to the data? How do we manipulate it? What is the user interface into all this data? And then the third part is the controller. How does this all get tied together? And this is manifested in terms of these kits that Apple has that integrate the data, say HomeKit or CloudKit or HealthKit or family sharing, that take all this information that we, as part of our model, organize it, provides the APIs, and then surfaces it to the display. So we've got big displays, we've got our Macs, we've got modest-sized displays, our iPads, and we've got our small displays that are highly mobile, always with us, always in our pocket, our iPhones. And so when you realize that Apple has these devices that are already ready using iOS to display the data models by virtue of the controllers, these kits, and give us the appropriate views through the user interface, it's already there. We don't need any new hardware to implement this infrastructure. And so that's why the title of the article is, Are You Ready for Apple's Next Hardware Platform? It's the iPhone, because it's always there, it's always in your pocket, and it's always ready to display all this information and provide the user interface. And in a sense, the article was also a bit of a smackdown of those people who say that, well, you know, we've had an iPod, we've had an iPhone, and we've had an iPad. Now we're ready for something new. We have to have new hardware. It's 3 years. We have to do something new. Pull the rabbit out of the hat. And that isn't really necessary. And that also explains why we didn't see a lot of hardware at WWDC keynote. Well, now the hardware we will need is some sort of sensor device called an iWatch to feed this new set of data into the controller called HealthKit. But other than that, you know, the iPhone is your window to the world right now, and that's all we need.
Now, I would go a step further, and I would say that you have the, I think you're correct in that there are three screen sizes, but I think the small screen is iPhone, iPad, and the medium screen is whatever you've got with a physical keyboard attached, whether that be an iMac or a laptop of some sort or a Mac Pro. And I think the big screen is whatever you've got your Apple TV hooked up to.
Oh, no, that's an interesting idea.
Because I am still, as I told these guys this morning when we were in our morning meeting and talking about what we were working on, I said the only thing I had going today was another skirmish in the battle I'm currently in with my home automation system. And that's the reason I'm like, you know, I really want to be able to just buy a new light switch and tap it to the Apple TV and then go screw it in the wall and have it work and have the Apple TV go, oh, you put it over there. Something like that, I think, would be great. I love the idea of the model view controller model being applied to Apple consumers. And the piece is really interesting and thoughtful. If you haven't spent any time on it, go get some coffee and sit down and read it. It's a thinky piece, and those are my favorite kind to read.
Thinky pieces. Now, okay, so I have to go nerd on you for
yes.
a minute. John, as you were describing this whole system, and as I was reading your analysis piece yesterday, I just kept thinking about the comlinks from Space 1999. Yeah, see, I told you I was going – I went nerd. I totally went nerd.
I remember watching that show, but I don't remember the comlinks.
Okay. Well, considering when that show was out and the sorts of better living through chemistry options that were available to you at the time, I'm not surprised. But the concept is you have this device that in that case, it actually clipped to their belt as opposed to what we do, which is stick it in our pockets. Mm-hmm. And it was a device that let them handle all of what I'll call the smart home features on the space station or on the moon base. So they could they could control the lights and the heating and the audio and video in their apartments. And then when they were in the control center, they could do things in the control center there as well. They would unlock doors for them. And then it was also their communication device. And
there you go.
Yeah. And so, I just keep thinking about that. And I guess it really explains a lot about me, doesn't it?
So this is the piece that actually yesterday, in conjunction with reading the piece that John put together, that blew me away was I was doing Ask Tua yesterday afternoon. And it's a live hangout, but we're sitting there. And one of the people on the call was talking about how the last piece Apple needs to unlock all of this, particularly we're talking about the home automation, the last piece Apple needs to unlock all of this is the personal sensor, the little wristband or whatever that you wear so that the sensors, you know, and it was sort of a conjectured future, but it was I wake up in the night and I need to go downstairs and the home brain knows that it's nighttime, so turns on some dim lights so that I'm not blinded going down the stairs, but also knows where to turn those lights on so that I'm not blind going down the stairs, so that I'm also not blind
I got to get a Jay Leno comment in here. Oh, I'm so lazy. I can't lift my hand to turn the light switch on.
Well, the thing I liked about this was that it was because I was talking about having Philips Hue light bulbs in my house. And one of the things I like about those light bulbs is that you can have them be very, very dim and then, you know, work their way up. And so it was like, it'll turn the lights on really dim, you know, in the living room, which is not a switch I would normally have access to. But the way my house is laid out, if that switch is on, I can see most of the way up the stairs and I can see into the kitchen. And, you know, and those are the parts I really need to be able to see if I'm getting up in the middle of the night for a glass of water from the kitchen. So the idea of that sensor piece was really interesting to me because if you pair that with a little bit of, you know, iBeacon or whatever around your house, then it knows from room to room, this is the kind of thing where like offices sometimes, you guys remember offices, right? Where office buildings will have like the motion sensor in the break room. So if nobody's in there, the lights are turned off, things like that.
It is really kind of science fiction-y. You know, if you saw that in a science fiction movie, like, I don't know, like Her or something like that, where the guy was walking around his house and the lights would light up and then go dim where he was and light up where he's going. You'd say, oh, wow, that's cool. Really cool. I like that.
Yeah. And it would be the kind of thing I would file away as like, that's going to be awesome someday.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's going to be awesome next year at the latest, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So we have a little bit of time left and I wanted to hop into another topic that I had a feeling would get both of you kind of wound up. And this is the idea that, I'm totally playing you. The idea that Apple is giving us a public beta of OS X Yosemite. Uh-huh. And while on one hand, that's really cool because that means there's going to be up to 1 million muggles playing with this operating system and finding what breaks. The downside is there's also 1 million muggles that will be playing with this operating system and seeing what breaks. And I wanted your take on that.
Kelly, you go ahead.
I believe this is great and terrible news. And it's exactly the way that Jeff put it. The great thing about it is that regular folks, all you need is an Apple ID. That's the barrier of entry here. So if you ever bought stuff off iTunes, if you ever bought stuff in an app store, you're set. All you have to do is go enter that information on Apple's sign-up page. a lot of people who are people, just as ordinary folk, muggles, as I always call them, muggles don't necessarily have an extra Mac laying around or are going to spend the time to partition their system and work out the workflow for a dual boot system so that they are able to try this out effectively. What's going to happen is somebody who has an iMac and maybe has had it for a year or two and is all settled in and, you know, not like a shiny new machine. Somebody who's been at it for a while is going to go, yeah, I'll totally do this. And they're going to do it on their only computer. And it's going to turn out that the thing people seem to forget is developers got access to this stuff on Monday. And they got access to it on Monday at the beginning of a week-long conference. So it isn't like everybody got it Monday morning and has been holed up in their undisclosed locations all the rest of this time, making sure that their apps are compatible. They've got all the rest of this week to learn more about the operating system, how it works, what they can do with the new stuff, and then they're going to go home and start building. So people who are going to do this need to be excruciatingly aware of what's going to happen. And the thing that we know is going to happen is that we don't know what's going to happen. Something could break. It could brick your computer and turn it into a really beautiful machined aluminum doorstop. It could, the one thing that you need to work on your computer reliably every single day could be completely broken. It may work beautifully, but it may be a complete disaster. Nobody knows. It's good to test so that people can find these things and get them fixed so that when the operating system is officially released, it'll be legit and it'll be something that is a smooth experience for people once it's official. But before it's official, there are a whole lot of pitfalls and problems and tragedy and wailing and gnashing of teeth and possibly rending of garments over the fact that things don't work. It's like the red wedding of technology since we've gone nerdy today. It could be wonderful. It could be the red wedding. Okay. So keep this in, not the purple wedding where it's like, ooh, yeah, I'm glad he got it. No, red wedding. People you like, things that you love, the part that you are emotionally invested in has been obliterated. And the thing that really concerns me about this is that there are still people who aren't backing up regularly. There are people who aren't backing up at all. And so all those lovely pictures you have of your kids or your grandkids or that one special family event where everybody got together that time and it was amazing. And the only copies of those photos are in some sort of application, and now you've bricked your computer and you can't scoop that data back without an exorbitant sum paid to a recovery company. these are the people that I worry about, because those are always the people that are going to end up having some sort of problem. So please make sure, if you do this, that you know well what you're getting into. There's a reason it's called the bleeding edge, because it will cut you.
It definitely will. This is the nature of beta software. And I knew, Kelly, that when we just let you loose on this, that all I had to do was sit back and hold on for the ride. And it worked out beautifully. And we're actually out of time. So we have to wrap up now with that awesome 5-minute diatribe warning that you just gave everyone. Please, everyone, pay attention to what Kelly said. Make sure that your friends and family members do the same. Do not install Yosemite Beta on a machine where you have important critical files. Yes. And thanks to both of you, John, Kelly, for joining me today. It's always a blast when you're on.
You're more than welcome, Jeff.
See you next time.